Good morning to you, Ms. Thiessen-Fenton. And you may proceed. I should note, for the record, that Justice Stacy is recused on this matter. And with that, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Megan Thiessen, and I am a senior certified law student hearing on behalf of the appellant in this case. The appellant has appealed to this court after convictions for attempted first-degree sexual assault and terroristic threats. In his brief, appellant did assert multiple assignments of error, and it is his position that each of these assignments of error would provide a sufficient basis for this court to reverse the decisions of the district court. In the interest of time, I will only be specifically discussing two of these assignments of error today. The first is that appellant asserts that the district court imposed an excessive sentence when it improperly applied the habitual criminal enhancement to appellant's sentence. This was improper because the SORA violation, a SORA violation is a specific subsequent offense as defined by this court's decisions in Chapman and its progeny. Second, the appellant asserts that he was deprived the effective assistance of counsel in violation of his constitutional rights when trial counsel failed to properly assert and preserve a constitutional challenge to Nebraska Revised Statute 29122, or more informally, the Intoxication Defense Statute. As a preliminary matter, I would like to address an argument in the appellee's brief that the issue of whether the habitual criminal statute was properly applied was not assigned as error, and therefore not properly before this court for consideration. It is appellant's position that this issue is properly before the court. The overarching assignment of error is that the district court abused its discretion in applying an excessive sentence. The brief then lays out several examples of these abuses of discretion, one of which is that the court abused its discretion in applying the habitual criminal statute. The cases cited in appellee's brief in support of their argument were cases where the appellant had completely failed to mention an error in the brief and then brought it up for the first time on oral argument, or in the Court of Appeals case, State v. Brooks, the appellant had properly assigned the errors, but the court found that the appellant did not properly argue them within the brief. So those cases are just not applicable in our case. And because this issue is squarely before this court today, appellant asserts that the use of prior convictions for SORA violations to enhance an appellant's sentence under the habitual criminal statute is improper because a SORA violation is a specific subsequent offense statute as defined by Chapman.
Can you repeat that? How do you think the prior conviction is being used here?
The prior conviction is, the SORA violation is our position. It is an enhancement of the underlying sex offense. So this is a case where there
that's
is...
That's your view of how all this fits together?
Yes.
And why isn't the prior conviction just merely an element?
It's not merely an element because unlike the statute at issue in Ramirez, which was a felon in possession of a firearm, where the underlying felony was only being used as to determine a status, with SORA, being subjected to SORA is part of the sentence for being convicted of one of the...
Is not the prior conviction relevant to the status of the particular defendant?
Yes, it is relevant to the status. However, it's slightly different. It's distinguishable from Ramirez. And it's more like the statutes at issue in Chapman and Hiddle. Now, in Chapman dealt with the DUI statutes, and the foundational rule was that offenses which are felonies because the defendant has been previously convicted of the same crime can't be used to enhance a sentence. But then this court in Hiddle expanded that slightly and held that offenses which are felonies because the defendant was previously convicted of even a different crime, in that case it was the driving under suspension was a felony because the appellant had been priorly convicted of DUIs, that those also could not be used for the habitual criminal enhancement. It is our position that although the statute at issue in this case isn't exactly like the DUI statutes, it's also not exactly like the felon in possession of a firearm statute or the felony resisting arrest statute that was at issue in Kinzer. And it is our position that it is more like the statutes at issue in Chapman and Hiddle. And that's because the SORA, being subjected to SORA, is part of the sentence for an underlying sex offense. It is used as a deterrent for, it's used to keep those individuals from reoffending. And in Ramirez, the court noted that Chapman and Hiddle rest on the legislature's specific intention in enacting a repeat offender enhancement. It is our position that a SORA violation in effect, and it was the legislature's intent, to use that as more of a repeat offender enhancement as opposed to a completely separate
crime. What is the offense that's being repeated in SORA?
Well,
It's not a new assault.
No, it's not a new assault.
A new terroristic event.
No, it's not. However,
it's a what? A failure to do SORA things.
A failure to do SORA things, which the SORA is being used as a type of sentence and punishment for the original underlying offense. So it's our position that a SORA violation was the legislature's way to enforce preventing reoffenses. So it more acts as if you were convicted of this underlying offense, sexual offense that subjects you to SORA, then you violate SORA, we are going to basically enhance your punishment under SORA make it a conviction for a felony. The only way that someone would be similar to Hiddle, the only way that someone would be a felon under SORA is if they had been previously convicted of one of the offenses. An appellant recognizes that it's not, the statutory scheme under SORA is not exactly like the DUI statutory scheme. However, it is appellant's position that it is more like the statutory scheme in the DUI statutes than it is just a new conviction. In Ramirez, the issue, appellant was essentially arguing that a felon in possession of a firearm is an unenhanceable offense. That's not what appellant is arguing here. Appellant does not say that attempted first-degree sexual assault or terroristic threats is always unenhanceable. Rather, appellant argues that the use of the SORA violations is improper because they, in effect, act as an enhancement of a prior offense and then cannot be stacked and further used to enhance under a habitual statute. Additionally, the district court imposed an excessive sentence when it abused its discretion in sentencing the appellant to consecutive sentences. Additionally, appellant asserts that he was deprived of his effective assistance of counsel, as it was deficient performance not to file a motion to quash to challenge the constitutionality of the intoxication defense statute. This was prejudicial because it failed to preserve the issue, and there was a reasonable probability that the proceedings could have come out differently. At the time this case was being decided, this court had already addressed the constitutionality of this statute in Dubré. However, that decision did not need to decide the merits of that case. So this issue was out there.
What about the U.S. Supreme Court case involving the Montana statute? Why is this different?
First of all, the United States Supreme Court case was a plurality opinion. Is different. So there was an ability for the district court to reasonably make a decision that this statute was unconstitutional. I am a little bit into my rebuttal time. If there are no further questions, we would ask that this court vacate the convictions and remand for a new trial or reduce the sentences. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Liss, good morning.
Good morning. Your Honor, may I please the court, Jason Liss, appearing on behalf of the appellate of the state of Nebraska. The appellant has assigned four errors on appeal. I'm not going to address the assignment of error regarding the sufficiency of the evidence. But if time permits, I'll address the remaining three regarding the denial of the proposed jury instructions, the ineffective assistance of counsel claims, and the excessive sentence claim. As far as the first issue, the denial of the proposed jury instructions, there are three proposed instructions at issue. I'm just going to focus on the proposed instruction regarding intoxication, unless the court has questions on the other two. As far as the proposed instruction on intoxication, the appellant's proposed instruction would have instructed the jury that intoxication could be considered in determining whether he had the required intent. We submit this proposed instruction was properly denied for two reasons. First, because Section 29-122 has virtually done away with the defense of intoxication in Nebraska. It provides that intoxication is defense only if intoxication is unintentional or involuntary. In this case, there was no evidence that appellant's intoxication was involuntary or unintentional. So we submit it was properly denied under 29-122.
Second, there should be no instruction regarding intoxication because of the no evidence supported.
Well, I'm not sure if there should just be no instruction whatsoever, or if a court should do what the court did in this case and say that you should not consider voluntary intoxication. I think either is okay, consistent with the law, but I'm not sure what exactly a court should do.
Well, was there any evidence that the intoxication, if any, was involuntary?
No.
And that would have been raised by the defendant, right? As an affirmative defense. Is that right? Okay.
Second, though, aside from 29-122, an intoxication instruction would not have been warranted in this case. Based on the evidence, the law requires that in order to submit the defense of intoxication to the jury, the defendant must have been wholly deprived of reason by virtue of his or her intoxication. The evidence in that case didn't rise to that level. Two officers who responded to the scene in this case testified that they did believe the appellant was intoxicated, but he had no trouble complying with the orders. He had no trouble walking to the police cruiser after he was arrested, and on the way to jail, when he was being transported to jail, he said the victim was going to get, or she knew what she was going to get because she was drinking his beer. So there's simply no evidence that he was wholly deprived of reason. So regardless of 29-122, we submit that the intoxication instruction was properly denied. As far as the excessive sentence claim, I just want to briefly address the appellant's assertion that his sentence is excessive because he was improperly found to be a habitual criminal, given that two of the prior convictions used in the habitual criminal proceeding were SORA convictions. The state's response is twofold, as set forth in our brief. Our first response is that this issue is not properly before this court because it was not assigned as error in the appellant's brief. Assigned error is that the district court abused its discretion in imposing an excessive sentence. The appellant's assertion that he was improperly found to be an habitual criminal is a separate question of law, has a separate standard of review, and does not fall within the scope of the assigned error. So we submit that this issue is not properly before this court. Our second response is that if this court does reach this issue, the habitual criminal enhancement was nonetheless valid. In fact, the two of the prior convictions used in the habitual criminal proceeding were SORA convictions does not equate to double enhancement under State v. Chapman, which provides that a defendant cannot be subject to double penalty under a subsequent offense statute and a habitual criminal statute. The use of a SORA conviction in a habitual criminal proceeding does not run afoul of this rule, because a SORA conviction is not an enhancement through a subsequent offense statute. Submit it's a separate offense that occurs if and only if the defendant violates the Sex Offender Registration Act. It's akin to using a prior conviction for felon in possession of a firearm in a habitual criminal proceeding, which this court upheld in State v. Ramirez. Submit it's no different with the SORA conviction. Briefly, I'll just address the Hiddle case. We submit that's distinguishable because in that case, this court found that the underlying conviction was driving under revocation. Found that that effectively was a subsequent offense statute. It was an enhancement because at the time, driving under revocation was directly part of the DUI scheme. It was part of the DUI statute. So it effectively was sentencing subsequent offense statute, so it couldn't be used for a habitual criminal. The only other thing I'll address is the appellant's ineffective assistance of counsel claim. The trial counsel was ineffective for failing to raise a proper constitutional challenge regarding 29-122. Submit this claim as without merit because 29-122 is not unconstitutional, set forth in our brief. And alternatively, as just discussed, an intoxication instruction would not have been warranted anyway because there's no evidence the defendant was wholly deprived of reason. there are no questions.
Mr. List, does it make, going back to the SORA argument, does it make any difference that the 2007 conviction was for a violation of SORA second offense? Is that, does the second offense portion of that make any difference at all in the analysis?
I don't think that it would, because it's not the fact that it's a subsequent offense which makes it a felony. I mean, it's already a felony. Any violation of SORA is a Class 4 felony. And so it's, whether it's a second offense and it's again a felony, or whether it's two separate offenses, either would be a felony. So, no, I don't think it does.
In your view, it's just merely a prior conviction.
Right.
That's what it stands for. Back on the challenge to 29-122, and I was asking opposing counsel about the U.S. Supreme Court case regarding the Montana statute. Is that the basis, pretty much, of your argument that why 29-122 would be constitutional, and therefore it's, I have to double my negatives, it would not be ineffective if one failed to challenge?
Well, I think we're actually dealing with separate issues or separate challenges to 29-122.
Okay.
The Montana v. Eagelhoff, you know, which you're looking at in Heinrichsen, that's just a challenge to eliminating the defense altogether and defense asserting that you can't do that. Whereas in this case, as I understand it, they're claiming that the impropriety is shifting the burden to the defense to prove that the intoxication was involuntary or unintentional. And so that
somehow is a due process problem.
That's their assertion, and our response is that it's not, and we've cited a line of authority which says there is no problem, there's nothing improper about shifting the burden to a defendant to prove an affirmative defense.
Oh, okay. So that would be somewhat like Justice Ginsburg's concurrence in Montana, where she says the legislature gets to define mens rea in the element, so long as it's not way out there in the violation of due process.
Yeah, it is in line with that. I mean, I think the issues do arguably go hand in hand. I was just pointing out that I think
Okay. Technically
they are raising a separate argument in this case, but
okay, thank you.
Under either issue, we believe that 29-122 is constitutional.
Thank you.
There are no further questions. We'd ask you for judgment.
Thank you. Do we have time for rebuttal?
She has 44.
44 seconds. Ms. Thiessen.
Just to briefly address the unconstitutionality of 29-122, it's my understanding that this issue is currently directly before this court and under advisement. It was briefed, case of State v. Hendricks. And it's appellant's position that this statute does violate due process because it does improperly shift the burden from the state to prove the intent element onto the defendant to disprove it. This is kind of like Sandstrom, the United States Supreme Court case, where the instruction given by the judge in this case made a presumption that the defendant was voluntarily intoxicated, which basically took that defense away. And it is our position that it is unconstitutional. If there are no questions, we would just ask that you vacate the sentences. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That takes us to the last case of the day, which is State versus Jeffrey R. Gilliam. Mr. Rapple, good morning to you, and I should note for the record that Justice Stacy is recused on this matter, and you may proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. My name is Mark Rapple. I represent the appellant in this case, Jeffrey Gilliam.